Thanks for listening to this recording from our Africa interview series, a set of podcasts by the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, tackling the big policy issues in the region. You can subscribe to the series by visiting iTunes U.
My name is Farhad Tahir. I'm with the CSIS Africa Program. I'm excited to be joined by Professor John Ryle and Dr. Jacques Mudidjak, co-editors with Justin Willis and Suleiman Baldo of The Sudan Handbook, a collection of specially commissioned essays covering Sudan and South Sudan. So let's talk a little bit about The Sudan Handbook. It's based on the Rift Valley Institute's Sudan Field Course, which if one of you could discuss, that would be great. Can you talk a little bit about the intention behind the project?
Yes, the Sudan course was actually started in 2004. That's before the war ended, in the North-South war ended in Sudan. And it was designed really to combat institutional amnesia on the part of outsiders who worked in Sudan. You know, very often people come from outside Sudan, they find it's an incredibly interesting and fascinating country, they learn a lot, and then they go to East Timor, as it were. And both Sudanese and non-Sudanese who were specialists or researchers or activists came together to create a syllabus, a very brief, one-week, intense syllabus where we could teach as much as we possibly could to new generations, not just of outsiders, but also of young Sudanese researchers, because they, of course, living in a malfunctioning state, were often cut off from institutions of higher education. So it became this kind of intense center, a 1 week a year of learning. It's taken place since 2005 in Rumbek, which is in the heart of southern Sudan, although the course covers both north and south, and indeed the borderlands. And it takes place in the senior secondary school in Rumbek, which is a historic institution of education, so that it takes place in a context, and it's a working school, so that we're surrounded by students. So it's a kind of total immersion course, I should say. It's emotional too. Dawn to dusk, and the people who go on it really work very, very hard to learn as much as they possibly can. Now, to try and crystallize some of that, because not everybody can afford a week or get to Rumbek, we produced this book, which is not the same as the course, but it's 20 chapters on key aspects of Sudanese history, ethnography, etc., even music. They're rigorous, they're scholarly, but they're also written in an accessible, viewed way. The book comes at a moment, of course, when the Sudan is becoming the Sudans, and it encompasses that. We've just published it this week, in early March, as a freely downloadable PDF. So it's available as an open source document. A very beautiful open source document, actually, for anyone to download and read and use. And that's really the culmination of our aim, which is not elite education, but to make good, proper knowledge available as widely as possible to everybody in Sudan and outside.
So one of the key messages that comes across is the need to understand Sudan's complicated history, and particularly for external actors to understand that. Why is that important?
In answering your question, and in reference to the book itself, the book brings together scholars, activists, policy people, even journalists. There are no many books of that kind available on Sudan, and the complicated history that you refer to is addressed in this book. And the reason why it is important to make it available is that there is a lot of international attention focused on Sudan. And very often that attention, well-intentioned and goodwill as it is, the responses to the Sudanese problems and crises that confront them is often being addressed in a vacuum, in the absence of proper field-based knowledge. And so this book combines the the ability to be a guide to anyone who is new to Sudan, who is interested in working in Sudan, or who wants to simply just understand what is often not well addressed in the media.
And a common mistake that a common mistake by external actors in their engagement with Sudan seems to be the tendency to impose top-down models of governance, whether political, economic, or otherwise, without proper consultation with the Sudanese people. How do you think that's manifested itself?
Well, the clearest manifestation of any kind of donor or NGO-driven development programs is that they fail if they have not consulted with the Sudanese, because it goes without saying that if you are trying to assist someone, you have to understand the problem before you design any kind of solution to that problem. You have to understand the nature of the problem itself, and the Sudanese understand their problems better than anyone else.
Sudan is a kind of museum of aid failures. Physically, you can see it. Some of these, of course, have been overwhelmed by war. Some of them were just misconceived in the first place. And I think it's important that people working in Sudan, and this is true of Sudanese themselves, understand these multiple histories. There are obviously community histories. There are collective histories. There's also an aid history. And outsiders particularly are stepping into a set of expectations which they may not be aware of, because they may not know their history in Sudan, but Sudanese do. And this is a very important aspect of the presence of outsiders in a time, we hope, at least in South Sudan, of reconstruction.
Both Sudans are in a very precarious position right now, plagued by insecurity, political strife, and economic turmoil. Do you see a way out of this cycle of conflict and instability? And if so, where do the solutions lie?
Well, you're quite right, but the things that you mentioned, the economic problems, the political instability, insecurity, are all connected. So there is no way to isolate each one of them for a solution. You have to have a comprehensive view. And the way out of this is to identify correctly the connections that are between these issues, understanding the context correctly, and then if there is going to be any pressure from the international community to bear on the Sudanese government and the government of South Sudan to exercise more responsibility towards their own people, you have to understand the thinking of those governments about why things are happening the way they are. What are the issues that they face and that confront them in their everyday search for stability and for economic development and progress? And once you have identified the challenges, then you tackle them accordingly.
I think we also have to confront the fact that this is a very long-term process. Part of the continual problem of interventions of all kinds, whether they're development interventions or interventions by the oil industry, is they're short-term. Actually, this kind of change, this beneficial change that you're asking about, is a generational thing. That means education is absolutely critical to it. And this is a responsibility, I think, held jointly by governments and donors, prioritizing an education which will produce a generation that is better equipped to tackle these challenges.
You've been listening to our Africa interview series, brought to you by the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Find more analysis from the Africa Program, including our latest publications and multimedia recordings, by visiting africa.csis.org or downloading the CSIS iPhone app.